What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Pickleball Connection. I'm Barrett.
And I'm Danae, and we're super excited to be hanging out with you guys today. Today, we're going to be doing a Cruise the News segment where we look at articles and recent news and talk about all the latest spicy pickleball topics.
Okay, are you ready to hop into it?
I'm ready to hop into it.
Let's get right in. Hey, real quick before we jump in, we just want to mention Selkirk's Nets. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting in pickleball, Selkirk has the best nets available. Not only are they the preferred net of the PPA Tour, but there are many options for all pickleball levels. If you're just starting out and wanting to grab a pickleball net, go to selkirk.com/collections/nets to find the best nets on the market. This is something that we're gonna jump right in, and it's something that you probably have heard a lot of people talking about. And basically, when I've been on the internet, I've seen a lot of noise amongst both pro and amateur players about how paddles are simply getting too hot. In other words, paddles are really poppy, and they even sound different than they used to sound. I know that years ago, probably about 2 years ago, grit was an issue. Paddles were really spinny. But really, as of the last 9 to 12 months, you know, this thing kind of all started about 9 months ago. I believe Gearbox released a paddle that got a lot of feedback. It sounded different. The ball was flying off of it. And then recently, the Yola Gen 3 came out. There's been a lot of buzz about just the sound that it makes, how hard it is, and some inconsistencies even in the manufacturing. I've seen forums online. I've talked to people that will receive one of these paddles, and one side of it will be gritty and the other side of it will be smooth. So there's almost like quality control concerns with the grit level, but also I've talked to people who one of the paddles that they get will be a little more dead and one of it will be just alive and really poppy. So with the increase of paddle technology, I wanted to ask you kind of, what are your thoughts on how paddle technology is changing the way pickleball is played?
I think that's honestly my biggest concern with it. You know, we've been fortunate enough to be in this pickleball space for the past 4 years. And it was really interesting, you know, just seeing the progression of how the game has changed, partly due to technology, partly due to more players getting into the game. But what's interesting is these paddles, because they're so poppy and hot, and by hot, we mean like the ball moves a lot faster coming off of it. The game's just changing. And, you know, even I was listening to one of the pros podcasts, I can't remember who it was, but they were like, you know, is a third shot drop dead? Like, what's the point of hitting a drop? Like, it's so hard to even hit a drop with some of these paddles because they're so hot. And so people are just driving the balls. And what's crazy is because it's not just that the paddle's hot, but it's gritty. So these balls that previously would be out by a mile are actually landing in.
Right. So it's kind of causing people to choose a different shot than they would have been able to hit.
And it's, you know, one of the things that I think the pros do so well is let balls go, that you should let go, you know, and now these balls that seemingly you should let go are landing in. So it's just changing a lot. But my biggest concern isn't really even with the pro game as much as it is with the amateur game.
What do you mean by that?
So you have to remember, the pros have a lot more control than amateurs. You know, we're amateurs for a reason. We're amateurs because we don't have the professional skill that pros have. But now you're handing people with less control, less ability to aim, to hold back on shots that they should hold back on. And you're giving them a really hot paddle. Like, the reality is pickleball and tennis are very different. You think of the court sizes, a pickleball court is less than half the size of a tennis court. You have so much less time to react with a pickleball. You're 14 feet out of the kitchen line. Like, people are going to get hurt. And that's my biggest concern. And even when I go out to the courts, I was scared with the whole paddle delamination thing. Now, we just hit with somebody that used one of the new paddles that came out. And it and it was hot and it was a little scary.
Yeah.
And it worries me to think like, man, not only are we changing the way that the game's played, but now it's like honestly a little bit of a safety concern, at least to me.
Yeah. I think one of my biggest issues with it is, you know, even amongst, I mean, they've put some regulations in at the pro level in the sense that they have paddle testing that they do. These pros can drop off 5 paddles at a time to this testing center. This test isn't really all that accurate. Like, I think it's, it's like a 85 or 90%. I could be wrong about that, but like the accuracy rate isn't 100%. And so like you could go drop off a handful of paddles at this testing center. And if just one of them passes, you can use, but how do you know that that didn't pass because the test was bad versus the paddle actually passed? And so these pros could go hand in 5 paddles, 4 of them could fail, and then one of them could pass. And now all of a sudden they can play with it. And so it's just interesting that people are really, it feels like the line keeps getting pushed back and blurred and blurred and blurred. And, you know, with the grit level, I think it's a little easier to test because you don't have to test things like deflection. You're mainly testing the surface of the paddle. And so I don't know, just interesting that the line keeps getting pushed back. And unfortunately, I feel like it's going to take a pro losing an eye or a big name in the sport having a big injury, getting hit with a ball for this to ever change. I just don't know how it's going to change.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I mean, we talked about this in another episode with eye protection, but like I just played in a tournament and I just got nailed in the face. I literally have a mark on my face.
It's like,
this is the second podcast.
It's kindly going away. It's kind of going away.
This is the second podcast I'm showing up with a face injury, but that's, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. The ball is just moving much faster. I don't know if you remember when we started playing, but we started playing what in 2019?
Fall of 2019.
So when we came in, there was really no paddles with grit. Nothing. There was not really, they were all kind of hybrid control power paddles.
And nobody drove the ball. It was always third shot drop.
Yeah. I think it was just much harder to keep your drive in because of the lack of grit. Right. Yeah. So I remember, like, I don't remember when it was, but Ben John's signature Franklin paddle came out and it was like the grittiest thing ever. Like they, I think it had like a spray grit on it. So it was really gritty when you first got it, but then the grit would be gone in like 2 weeks.
Exactly. And people would have to be like getting a new one.
Yeah. So like it was $99, but you literally had to buy one every like 2 to 3 weeks. So, and then, you know, we had like Electrum. I don't think Electrum's around anymore. But
the carbon paddle gate number one.
Right. So Electrum came in with this carbon fiber technology. Then Carbon, the brand, released their carbon fiber paddles. And then all these brands start switching to carbon fiber. But now they're changing the core of the paddle, not just the surface. And so it's just really interesting to me how, like I said, the line keeps getting blurred. I don't know if you saw, but this last tournament, there was a lot, I actually saw some forum posts. There's a post on Facebook. We'll link it in the description. But there's a post on the Kitchen Forum, and somebody was asking, is Ben Johns playing with the new Generation 3 Yola paddle? Because it doesn't sound like the other ones. And so I did a little digging into it, and a lot of people speculate that Yola painted the second generation paddle to look like the third generation paddle. Because again, you know, if Ben's not using the third generation, then they're not going to sell it. So just as a ploy to sell more paddles, they paint it to look like the old one, but Ben's clearly paddle sounds different than the other generation threes. And I think I wanted to bring this up because at what point does having too much pop create a disadvantage? Because I think, you know, I did see some pros. We were at the PPA Red Rock tournament this last week. I saw lots of pros missing their serves long, their returns long. If a ball sped up at you, is it harder to dampen that ball and reset it? Or is it going to pop off the paddle? Like, at what point does power create a disadvantage versus an advantage? You know, there's just, it's just interesting to kind of think about how this is changing the game.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, and this is maybe a whole other tangent, but it's interesting to me too, how much this changes even the results that people would get. Like, I really wonder what would a tournament result look like if we all played with the same paddle.
Yeah, I'm interested. Like, what do you think? Like, if everyone had the same exact paddle, do you think the results would be different than they are?
I think potentially. I don't, I think, you know, Ben Johns and Anna Lee are still number one.
Do you think the pros get to play with paddles that are different than the ones that hit the market?
Oh, absolutely. You'd be crazy to not know that. And if you are just kind of getting into pickleball, that is a thing. Like the pros are playing with typically different paddles.
Dude, so these manufacturers or these brands are special making paddles for the pros that the amateurs don't have access to?
Correct.
So just interesting.
For the most part, you can't speak for every company or every player, but
yeah,
that is something to be aware of, which is an interesting little piece of tea.
I'm just curious at what's going to happen. I have heard some speculation that at the beginning of 2025 that they're going to be rolling out some new regulations. So all these companies that are putting out these hot power paddles, are they not going to be able to sell them because they're not legal anymore in 2025? I don't know. But I will say, you know, obviously I'm a little biased. Selkirk TV is obviously the producer and sponsor of this podcast. So I love Selkirk paddles for two main reasons. One, I get to support USA made manufacturing.
Love it.
And two, the warranty is just second to none. So, I mean, there's a lifetime warranty on their paddles. I have heard, unfortunately, some people that get these defective paddles from other brands, we'll say, and they try to reach out for the customer service and it's just not there. They don't respond. And it's just great to be aligned with a company that has great customer service. So that's just a shameless plug, but I am interested to see what will happen in the coming years. Will they have to put a cap on paddle technology?
Yeah, I think we're in such an interesting space. Like you think of other sports like baseball and golf, they kind of all went through this phase where, you know, remember golf technology got so good that people were out hitting courses mm-hmm. and they had to rein them back. So I'm interested to see, you know, similarly, what does pickleball do now that, you know, the technology is actually changing the way that, let's call it, the founders made for the game to be played.
Right.
You know, like, is there going to be a pullback or is it like just too far gone and going to be too, I don't know, I don't want to say ruined, but too, you know, are people going to run with this too long where it's, you know, going to be hard to pull back.
Right.
So I'd be interested in what you guys think. If you have an opinion on this, whether it's, do you think the paddles are too hot? Do you think it's fine? Do you think that it's changing the way the sport should be played? Do you think the way the sport's played should change? We would love to hear your feedback. Go ahead and comment them in the comments below. I'm actually very interested to see, especially what amateurs think. You know, we've been hearing a lot of the pros' opinions, but honestly, I'm more interested in rec and amateur. What do you guys think? Because I think at the end of the day, there's more of us than there are pros. So I want to see what you guys think about that.
Right. Well, before we get into the next subject, I do have one more question for you. Okay. So when it comes to paddles, I think a lot of people have mentioned viewership and what this does for viewership.
Yeah, it's huge.
So in your opinion, when paddles are really poppy and have a lot of power versus paddles that you don't have as much power or you don't have as much spin, which is more fun to watch, like to you? So, like, what do you think?
So it's interesting that you bring this up. People have talked about this in the past couple years about how the professional women's doubles game is the most viewed event in pickleball. And a lot of us speculated because the rallies are longer and the firefights are longer, meaning a firefight, if you're not familiar with that term, is like the quick volleys back and forth go for longer periods of time compared to the men's doubles game. Men's doubles game, obviously you have more power and typically there's not a firefight of an exchange of volleys extended like there is with the women because there's more power. The ball is coming faster. Typically, if it's sped up, it will just be countered and that's the point. So for the longest time, women's doubles has been the most watched event in all of pickleball, which is really cool. P.S. That's really rare in the sports world. So I think that's awesome personally. But what's interesting is now that you're adding in hotter paddles, you're taking away, again, longer rallies. There's less incentive to dink. Now it's speed. First one speed up is typically rewarded. Or if you speed up the wrong time, the counter's coming up back way faster. I feel like it's making the points shorter.
Right. That's kind of what I was going to ask. Do you think the points are shorter?
I think the points are shorter. I think they're less interesting in terms of firefights. There's less of that really fun volley exchange.
But you don't think it's a little more interesting because the firefights are faster? So it's like pop, 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 pop versus... Well,
what's the point of a fast firefight if it's two volleys and done?
Right. So we like those like long extended firefights.
I think the long extended firefights are so cool. Like it's just such a crazy moment.
Do you think they're more likely to change paddles or change the ball?
I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It's so up in the air right now. Cause like I said, I feel like the line keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed for paddles, but we'll have to see. I'd love to hear from you guys in the comments though. What do you think? Do you think slower paced paddles, slower paced balls make the game more fun to watch? Or do you think speed makes the game more fun to watch? Let us know in the comments below.
Yeah.
Ready to get to the next one?
Let's get to the next one. So this next kind of little spiel is from Reddit, and it's kind of about like winning. So I want to get your opinions on this, but basically it just says unforced errors are the key to winning. The less you make, the more you'll win. I see so many players try to have a fancy serve and put junk on it, but they hit it out too much. Just get the dang ball in the serve. So what do you think about that?
So basically this forum post, this guy, I'd be interested. I can't remember when this was posted. We'll try to post these in the comments or in the description below if you want to go back and view any of these posts. But you know, this is interesting because I think this kind of ties into what we were talking about before with paddles getting hotter, right? I think especially pickleball in 2021, this was a very true statement. Unforced errors, the team that had the fewest errors wins, right? Mm-hmm. But I think something that's super interesting is I was looking at some stats from the most previous tournament, the PPA Red Rock tournament that we were just at. And I know you saw, but the Johns brothers, who are considered the best men's doubles team in the world to date, got beat by a team. They the last game of the series. So it was a 3-game series. They won the first game, 1-11. So they won 11-1, right? And then game two, the next team barely beat them 13-11. But then in game three, they got pickled, which if you're not familiar with the term getting pickled, it means they got shut out. They got beat 11-0 by this team. And if you look at the stats from this game, what you'll find is that the other team that beat them, Tardio and Daescu, they actually made more errors than the Johns brothers. Mm. But they won more fast hands battles. They initiated more hands battles. And so they were actually being more aggressive and they pickled them. They won 11-0. So I think the game is changing and this kind of relates to what we were talking about before. But I don't know. I think that obviously unforced errors still matter. Mm-hmm. You know, like typically I think this is a great advice if you've never played in a tournament before. I think whenever you first play in a tournament, it can be very easy to get very amped up and to want to use your speed ups and use your power. But I think that there's something so, you know, there's something so nuanced about going into a tournament or going into a game and just playing a clean game and waiting for the opportunities to be aggressive. But I also think you have to know your play style. Do you like to be the one that aggressive, or do you like to be the aggressor, or do you like to be the one that just kind of plays patient and counterattacks? I don't know. What would you say?
Yeah, I think a lot of it honestly is play style for me. I think there are some people that they thrive when they're aggressive. And then when you hold them back, or let's say you have two aggressors together and they decide, okay, you're going to be the patient one, they don't play well together.
Right.
And so I think a lot of it is understanding your play style and playing to your strengths. I remember when I played sports growing up, I did running and basketball. And I remember my coach told me this story about this girl that she coached, and she was like a phenomenal, like, driver to the basket, meaning she would just dribble and like break through all the defense and she'd get to the basket, but terrible 3-point shooter. And her coach like made her focus on shooting 3-pointers because she was bad at it. And she ended up kind of like becoming an average player because she like didn't use that thing that she was so good at. And so I think it's similar. Like sometimes you can almost focus on trying to be good at everything and you almost forget that you're like especially good at this one thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's always better to play to your strengths and not to your weaknesses and understand that even in terms of offense, defense, if you are somebody that is a little bit riskier of a player, then be risky, but you know, don't be reckless, be risky. If you're someone that's a little bit more defensive and safe, but you're so consistent, then be consistent. Like, I think you need to play to your strength that's my opinion.
Yeah. You bring up a good point. I think, you know, this would probably be a very true statement in all sports, right? You know, do we become better at our sport by perfecting, you know, our weaknesses do we become better at our sport by perfecting our strengths? Do we overemphasize and just do what we're really good at? Or do we just need to become more well-rounded as an athlete and really work on the areas that need improvement? I think, you know, both could be true to an extent. So I think that's a very interesting point that you bring up.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you should ignore your weaknesses, but I am saying there's a difference between focusing and playing to your weaknesses versus focusing on your strength and playing to your strength.
Yeah. You know, but again, going back to like the original post, this kind of has to do with the evolution of pickleball and how the game seems to be changing, because I would absolutely say this is true 10 out of 10 times. 4 or 5 years ago when pickleball was being played, the team that made the fewest errors won. But as we just saw in this previous tournament, that wasn't the case. And I think it does have to do with how the game's getting faster. Teams are preferring, especially at the men's level, just to rip the ball as hard as they can, just to grip it and rip it. And they want to pull the trigger first because the stats show that the team that pulls the trigger first has more success in today's mm-hmm. game, which wasn't the case, you know, a couple years ago in pickleball. So right. Really interesting stuff. Well, do you want to go to the next one?
Let's go to the next one.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, this next post does come again from the wonderful, wonderful world of Reddit. I'm going to get it right one of these times. I do that every time and it's a big tongue twister. But yeah, so this was posted 5 days ago on Reddit. So
she's fresh.
Fresh post here. And it's literally titled Mixed Doubles Frustration. Mm. And this is what this anonymous Redditor said. He said, I usually play 4-5 mixed. In tournaments, I barely see the ball as the female player, who are often 3-5 to 4-0-ish at best, gets targeted all the time. Like, all the time. The balls I do get to play are usually lobs over her head or overhead smashes directed at me. I don't want to overpoach and play 90% of the court as the pros do, since we're not pros and the partner that I signed up with also paid $100+ as a tournament fee as well. I am seriously considering quitting mixed doubles for good. But before I do, I thought I would ask, is there any other solution to this other than me taking up 90% of the court? What strategies can I make, or what strategies can I take to the opponent's return of serve to make them hit their third or even dink in my direction? So this guy's frustrated.
Yeah.
He went into a tournament. He saw 10% of the balls. They hit every ball to his partner, who he claimed was worse than him, and which we don't know.
We don't know.
That's what he said. And he didn't get to play much, but he's like, I don't want to go take her balls. I don't want to go take reps away from her. She paid to be in this tournament too. Is there a way to get more involved in the game other than just going over and taking what seems to be hers? What do you think when it comes to mixed doubles and guys coming over to take more of the court? Have you ever felt like this, where you get to touch all the balls or you don't get to touch as many balls in pickleball?
You know, thankfully I feel like I've had way better experiences playing mixed.
It means you probably had a good mixed partner.
Yeah. No, but really, I actually have. I've had great mixed partners. And the reality is, even when you watch pickleball at a pro level and you watch mixed doubles, a lot of the dinking is going from the woman to the woman. You know, a lot of it's cross court. And that's, you kind of have to understand the roles right? When you're playing mixed. And, you know, I don't mind if my mixed partners come over and they take up more of the court, but I also appreciate that this guy's like, I'm also not Ben Johns, so I'm not going to play like Ben Johns. Cause that's also my other pet peeve is some people want to take the whole court and,
Because they see Ben Johns come over. And they think they're Ben Johns.
And they think they're Ben Johns. And I'm like, Ben Johns can do that. You cannot do that. So I appreciate that. And, you know, your partner obviously wants to play the game too. But, you know, I hear the frustration and it sounds to me like maybe you and your partner honestly probably need to communicate on some ideas of like, hey, like, you know, how much are you going to come over if they're thinking cross court? How much are you going to pressure the middle? You know, and then also alternatively, what is her role in dinking? Like, for example, I know I've talked with my mixed double partners of like, okay, do you want me to dink them out wide? Do you want me to dink the inside foot? I think moving the ball around is key, absolute key in mixed doubles for the male to see a ball. If you just keep dinking in the same place and there's no pressure for that ball to switch directions, it's just going to keep going back. So it's absolutely key to have a strategy when you're dinking and moving that team around. You should add in lobs. You should be adding in absolute chaos so that the ball isn't predictable and going right back to the woman right every time. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, I know. Even we've played in tournaments before and maybe we take a loss to a team and then we say to ourselves like, why did it just feel like we were playing their game?
That is my biggest pet peeve.
You know, like you get away from your game, the things you do well, and you're just responding to what they do. They clearly feel like they're in control of the points, you know? And so I think that's a big thing is like, how do you play your game? What patterns or what kind of things do you want to get into? Like, do you want to get into more fast hands exchanges? Do you want to poach more? Do you want to shake and bake, you know, these different things that you kind of know your identity as a partner pair as you go into the game.
Yeah.
I know you just played in a mixed tournament. Did you experience any of that while you were playing? Like maybe not on even just on your side, but on the other side, like,
I mean, I definitely think it's totally a strategy to target somebody. I think it is. And it's fair game, especially in a tournament. And so like, typically if I see somebody struggling, I'm going to target them,
right?
You know, like that's just how the game's played. And, you know, it's a good strategy to use.
Yeah. I think I remember watching in this latest pro tournament. I think it was Anna Bright and James Ignatowicz playing Ben and Etta in the finals. Mm-hmm. And I think James and Anna won one of the,
they won the first one, I want to say.
The first game or the second? It was one of
whatever.
They won a game. And I remember the game that they won, I noticed that, you know, there was, as often as it is in mixed, there's this cross-court battle. If all players are right-handed, there's kind of this cross-court battle between the females and the males kind of creeping in there trying to get in. But what I noticed is that the game that they won, Anna Bright was actually speeding the ball up and she was actually going behind the male, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that was working really well for them to not just get stuck in this cross court pattern, but actually she was changing up her location. Like you said, and I think this is a very underrated shot. I think especially in mixed, I think if you're a female, like go behind the guy. Like, I think,
well, bait cross court, get them to squeeze middle and then go behind the guy.
Right. And I guess the other is true as well. You know, if you're keeping the guy honest, then it's going to open up more in the middle. It's going to open up more cross court. But I think, something that we fall into and mixed very often is we get zoned into these patterns. They're the same patterns over and over again. It's cross court, cross court, cross court, cross court. And I think changing up the pattern is really key. This guy was asking in this forum post, what are some things that, you know, would help me get more involved? I was reading some of the thread. The thread's actually pretty interesting. And a guy said, one of the things that you could do is you could develop a powerful serve, because if you're putting a lot of pressure on them with your serve, it's going to be much harder for them to direct their return to the female. So, and if they're hitting their return shorter, then you can run over and hit it more easily. So, directing or developing a powerful serve was one tip I saw in there. Another one was like just to figure out some kind of like isolation patterns where you're do you isolate one player and is that working? And if you don't, then how do you, you know, keep the other player honest as well? So I think this is a frustration that I've seen a lot online. I've talked to a lot of people about it, and I wanted to ask you, I see some people posting, like people getting angry at the man for coming over and into the woman's side of the court. Like, have you noticed that? Like, I see people.
Are you talking like unnecessarily?
Yeah. Like, why do you think that people out there think that you can only play your side? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know. I think as a beginner, I think we all thought like, okay, you get this half, I get this half, you know, but then you start to get to know the game better and you realize there's actual like geometry and angles to think about, and moving with your partner is really important. I think pressuring middle is really important and stuff like that. So I think that it's natural. And as your game progresses, you should learn how to move with your partner on the court. Like I said, it's one thing to squeeze the middle and take a ball here and there. It's another thing to try to play like Ben Johns when you're a 4-0 rec player.
There you go. You heard it here first. So let me ask you this. When it comes to mixed play, what do you prefer as a female? Do you prefer a mixed partner who is more aggressive, or do you like somebody that kind of slow, methodical, and sets up the point?
I don't know. I think I honestly would say somewhere in the middle for me. You know, I don't like ultra aggressive because I feel like I can play pretty aggressive too. So like two aggressors can just be like too much happening. But I also don't really want someone that just is super defensive and consistent. I don't know. If I had to pick a dream pickleball partner, they'd have like equal 50-50.
Okay, so you get to play a mixed doubles pro match. You can't pick Ben. What guy are you picking?
You're putting me on the spot, dude.
What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. I'd have to think about it.
We'll come back to it. Maybe if you're listening and you're a female and you follow the pro scene, if you could play with a men's or a mixed doubles partner besides Ben Johns, who would it be? Let us know in the comments.
Yeah, I like that. I want to see.
I'm interested.
What people say.
Because I think another thing that we're not bringing up, I mean, it's a whole nother subject we could say for another episode, but you know, chemistry is huge as well. You know, the atmosphere that's created.
Well,
on the
that's
court.
A hard thing, right? Is like my thing is, I think personality is so important in a partner. So that's just a hard question for me to answer.
No, I get that. Like you can go based just off of skill, but I think we don't talk about it a lot, but I think having chemistry in mixed is maybe even more important than having chemistry in men's or women's, just because, you know, there's two different roles that are happening on the court. And I think it's really important for the male to make sure the female feels like she's killing it. And yeah. She's not just a liability, because I think oftentimes right side players, they don't get praised for like really amazing shots. They just get knocked for missing shots because they play more of a defensive role, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think typically, you know, the right side players don't get as much glory as the left side players all the time. So I think it's maybe even more important than mixed to really support your partner.
Yeah, I agree.
So as we've done in previous episodes, guys, we're going to end with kind of a tip of the day. Danae's going to give us a tip of the day kind of coming up. But just a reminder, if there's any questions you have as you're listening to this, please let us know in the comments. We are going to turn kind of the end of every episode into a Q&A once we have enough questions come in. So please, any questions you have, it could have to do with the pro scene. It could have to do with your local rec night, whatever it may be, let us know in the comments questions that you have that you'd like us to talk about, and we'll try to get to them on a future episode. So Danae, do you want to leave us with a little tip of the day?
Yeah. Yeah. So the tip that I wanted to share today, this feels like the most basic of all tips, but it will literally change everything in your game to me. It goes with every single shot, every single thing. My biggest pet peeve when watching beginners or coaching beginners even is when they hit a ball and then their follow through like takes their paddle down and they hold their paddle at their side like it's like a purse. And then right before the next shot, they yank it up to like respond to the next shot. That is something I see most beginners do just because it's really unnatural to, you know, hold your paddle up. But they always say, you know, you want to have your paddle in the ready position always. And that ready position means that paddle's out in front of you, that your elbows, for example, aren't tucked into your like rib cage, but they're away from your body. That paddle's in front of you because you're more likely to A, be aggressive, take more balls out of the air, which puts more pressure on your opponents, but B, you're not automatically jamming yourself. If you have your elbows in your body, and even if your paddle is down too, like you're automatically in a defensive position. You really can't be offensive. Mm. So this is just a really, it's like I said, the most basic of basic tips, but it literally will change your game in seconds just to remind yourself, hit, keep the paddle up, hit, keep the paddle up. Hick, don't let it drop, because I'm telling you, that little adjustment will buy you more time to react, allow you to be more offensive, and it's just such a simple fix.
That's a great tip. I actually was thinking about this the other day. I know you said that's something beginners do, and I'm not necessarily a beginner, but we were hitting the other day, and I was like, am I doing this? Like, am I bringing my paddle back up to the ready position, like, in between shots? Do I let my paddle, like, drift down, like,
I don't know.
You see me on the other side of the net.
I don't really pay attention. Well, here's the thing. I will say this. I do pay attention to an extent, because if ever I see someone's paddle down at the ground or at their knees, I will speed the ball up at them because I know they're never ready and it will instantly jam them and they can't do anything offensive with it.
There you go. I mean, I was like, literally like, I was like, I kind of feel like I'm not getting my paddle up where it needs to be. I was like kind of talking to myself. I was like, why do I keep missing like the counters and the responses? So I don't know if you saw, if you like see that me do that where I drop my paddle down and you
I don't know it. If I see it in drilling, because I'm kind of maybe more focused on what I'm doing. Yeah. But
okay, I'll maybe have to tape myself, or you know,
yeah, it's interesting.
Get some footage of me, because I was curious if I was doing that, because I think there's sometimes, you know, we do things we don't really know we're doing until we see ourselves on film, which that's another great tip. I would say take a camera if you have a tripod, or buy a cheap tripod off Amazon and just set it up and watch yourself play. I think you can pick up things by watching yourself that you don't know that you're doing without having the footage.
Yeah, we love it.
So, well, guys, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Pickleball Connection. Please let us know in the comments what you'd like to have us talk about in a future episode, and we will see you on the next one.